This is Windy City Sports Talk, the podcast.
A show that features all the latest news, in-depth analysis, as well as compelling conversation for the Chicago Bears.
Go Bears.
Go Bears.
Bulls.
This is what Bulls basketball is all about.
Blackhawks.
That's hockey, baby.
Cubs.
Quiet. The Cubs win the World Series.
And the White Sox. Windy City Sports is on the air. And now here's your host, Will Hatzel.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Windy City Sports Talk. Another great episode planned today. Baseball is underway, and we're already frustrated with the White Sox, and we're feeling pretty good about the Cubs. We're a few weeks away from the NFL draft. There's been some interesting Caleb Williams discussions going on. Apparently, it's illegal to paint your nails or whatever, or you can't have a pink phone case. That means you cannot be an elite football player. So just a little preview of me being a little bit heated for this episode at times. But my good buddy Skyler is here joining us again today to talk baseball and some football stuff. So Skyler, thanks for coming on again, buddy. How does it feel to be able to watch live baseball again?
Well, I think I mentioned on the last podcast that baseball is probably my favorite sport overall. So that it's great, but then I remembered, I'm a White Sox fan. So that's a problem.
And that's a train wreck.
Overall, yeah, I think train wreck would be an understatement. But yeah, overall, I mean, just the fact that baseball is back is nice. Like, it's good to think, like, for the next, like, 6 months, there's going to be baseball on pretty much every day. So that's good. But yeah, in terms of the White Sox, things are going about as good as we expected them to.
Yeah, and that's where we'll start. We're going to do some baseball talking first, and then we'll get into some Caleb Williams stuff and what the Bears need to do in the NFL draft now that free agency's done. And, you know, we have a pretty good look at what the team's going to look like besides, you know, a few more draft picks that the Bears will, you know, add a few more players in. So, but yeah, I mean, and what a perfect timing to talk White Sox today, right? I mean, this is at the time of us recording, this is literally a few hours since Yoan Moncada got hurt. It appears to be a relatively, you know, serious injury. It appears to be basically similar to what Eloy Jimenez has. And right now, Eloy Jimenez, they're on the IL. Robert's going to miss, I think they said, like 6 to 8 weeks. Eloy is definitely going to be out a couple of weeks. Now you might be missing out with Moncada. Like, literally, like, what's left of this team after all the trades and the guys being released and moving on to other teams, literally what's left of your core is now on the injured list. And it's disheartening to see because they've been playing like garbage, literal hot garbage, outside of maybe Garrett Crochet, who's been a bright spot. But there's a reason why I'm not getting myself super hyped for that, and I'll hold off on that for a second. But Skyler, what are your initial thoughts on the season with them having such an anemic offense? And also, again, hey, it's the same crap every season. You get a lot of your supposed star players on the IL, not playing, not being able to perform.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, things are going about as bad as we expected them to. I mean, any Sox fan with a brain knew that we were pretty much a lock to have 100 losses this season, or at least like 90, 95 plus. And yeah, in my opinion, this team is pretty much guaranteed to have 100 losses at this point. And I'm not just saying that because of the start that they've had. I was saying that going into the season. I really do. I mean, I do believe this team is a 100-loss team because that's just I've heard people calling it a bridge year to kind of bridge the gap between your, you know, reloading, rebuilding, whatever the hell you want to call it. Bottom line is they are not set up for success this season. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and blame that on Chris Getz because obviously he was given a super tall task of, you know, fixing this all in one offseason. So, yeah, overall, I mean, it's just like it's disappointing to see. But at the same time, what do we really expect? I mean, we all pretty much knew this was coming. It's just the way that it's playing out is not great. I mean, you look at, like, as of today, I'm surprised we're actually not in last place in terms of run differential or run difference, whatever you want to call it. We are actually third from last. So, yeah, that I mean – so that what would that be, 28th in run difference? So that's pretty bad, but somehow not as bad as I thought it would be. But yeah, just not a good start whatsoever.
You know, what I can't figure out is, like, why are the good players not good on this team? Why are we sitting here looking at Benintendi with a 167 average? Why is Eloy Jimenez not hitting the ball like he once was? Why is Luis Robert, who only played in seven games, leading the team in RBIs? It's just, it's crazy. And then again, you look at Moncada, who's actually was leading in hits and batting average. Now you're losing him to injury. So it's disappointing. Like, again, we knew this team was not going to be good, but what's disappointing to me is the fact that even the guys that are still here that are supposed to be the bright spots or the guys that are the most talented on the team just aren't doing anything. Like, the only guy that gets a break is Luis Robert, who actually played pretty well last year. We knew he had an all-star season, rightfully so. He got elected to go to the game, got hurt he didn't play in the game either. I think he got hurt right before or something. So it's like, there's like this dark cloud over any Jerry Reinsdorf team, whether it's the Bulls with the constant injuries and the tragedy of Derrick Rose's career going down the drain. And then you got this team that the whole damn lineup is getting hurt. Like, we knew pitching wasn't going to be good. There's a lot of no-name guys or guys that they're literally only starters in the MLB right now because the White Sox are so depleted of talent that we even signed Mike Clevenger back to a one-year deal to help support that. And like I said, Skyler, it's really disappointing because a lot of these guys we had high hopes for, and they're at a historical low. I mean, this is like one of the worst Sox teams ever. This is like, it's been like 40 years or so since they've had this much of an offensive output, which is not a lot. So when you're not scoring runs, you're not hitting the ball. I mean, Moncada is the only guy with over 10 hits so far this season. And I'm looking at updated stats since that came out after the game tonight, which, again, he got hurt in. So it's not looking great. And I can't get excited about Garrett Crochet because that brings it into the whole looming picture here of depression of being a Sox fan is, what happens if he gets good? Then all of a sudden, what happens in a couple of years? Do they trade him because they're continuing a rebuild? Or is his primetime years here in Chicago going to be wasted because this team never wants to get serious enough to actually build a contender the correct way? So those are just my thoughts. How do you feel about Crochet? And, you know, what do you think about what I just said about even the good players playing poorly?
Yeah, I mean, and that's another thing. Crochet, like, that was opening day was, like, incredible. Like, I really didn't think he was going to do that well. And it seems like he's really doing a great job with what he's been handed. I was surprised that he was the opening day starter. I think it's hard to argue against him deserving it, though. I mean, he's always had really good stuff. He throws really hard. He's like one of those, and he's a young guy too. Like, I mean, why not give him the ball? I know some people were saying, like, oh, why not Soroka or Fetty? And it's like, I get that, but at the same time, it's like, this season doesn't mean anything anyways. Let's see what we have in some of these guys like Crochet. But here's the thing about Crochet. You're talking about him getting good, and I think he's going to be very good, but what's his innings limit at? I mean, he hasn't started – I mean, before this season, I don't think he had started a game since, like, early college days. Or, I mean, you know, like, basically he hasn't started a game since college, before the season started. So – I don't know what his innings limit is looking like, but I would imagine he's probably not going to throw any more than, like, you know, 160, 170 innings. I mean, I'd be absolutely shocked if he threw any more than, like, yeah, honestly, like 150. So it's going to be interesting to see how his body handles it, how his arm handles it. I really hope he can become somewhat of an ace here, but it's like, yeah, this rotation is just a mess. I mean, you kind of talked on it before, but how many of these guys would be like a fringe starter, like a number five guy, or maybe like a guy that they bring up for a doubleheader on any other team? It's just, this team was not built to win, and it's not something that can just be fixed. Like, I know everyone keeps saying, oh, you know, retooling, or it's like we're reloading. I mean, there's, you can't do that. Like, you can't flip things completely, like 180 degrees in like 2 or 3 years. It just doesn't work in baseball, especially for a team like the White Sox that doesn't go out and spend money. So yeah. Obviously Crochet has been a bright spot. So we'll see what happens the rest of the year with him.
Yeah. I just find it ironic that it's the pitching staff we're somewhat complimenting more than the, you know, the offense. Again, I thought there were, you know, there's a couple of bats there that should make things a little bit interesting. I mean, I look back at the second game of the season against the Tigers, you know, it's not, you know, they're not playing great, but Luis Robert had two home runs in that game. They ended up losing in the, I believe it was extra innings, you know, another one of those games where Grifol had some head scratching decisions during the game, managerial decisions where I was like, oh, is Tony La Russa, you know, managing this game or what the hell's going on? But yeah, it's just, you know, and again, the reason why I'm trying not to get super hyped on Garrett Crochet, first off, you make a good point about what's his innings limit, because we got to remember this guy had Tommy John surgery, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago. You know, he missed some time last year. I know near the end of the season went out, missed some time near the end of the season with left shoulder inflammation. So, I mean, this is a guy that's had some injury issues, and obviously Tommy John is a big thing that literally kills careers. So for him to have that early in his career, very concerning, but if they're smart, they find a way to manage that. And I would hope he could start all season. Just, you know, we can't go crazy. I don't think they could go crazy. He can't be doing seven or eight innings a game. And every time he's out there throwing 100 pitches, I don't even think he's going to be.
Yeah, he's got to have.
It's not going to happen, but, you know, that
he's got to have the adequate rest. You know, he can't go, you know, once every 3 or 4 days. Like, he's going to have that rest, like, every fifth day. Or every fifth or sixth day. But I mean, yeah, it's, and he throws so hard. And like you're saying about the Tommy John, like it's concerning that he had it so early, but at the same time, I've heard that that's a good thing for, like, cause I mean, a lot of pitchers nowadays are going to have Tommy John at some point in their career, and some even twice. So maybe him, I've heard players getting it earlier on is sometimes better because they get it out of the way, and then hopefully it'll be a long time before they have issues again. But yeah, he throws so hard. It's like kind of concerning. So I don't know what it's going to look like the rest of the year, but I guess we'll see. I was going to ask you, I don't know if you, I know it's a pain following the minor leagues, especially for the Sox nowadays with, you know, cause obviously a while ago it was fun to watch and think about all these guys coming up, and now it's like we don't really have anyone in the majors, don't really have anyone in the minors. How do you feel about Colson Montgomery potentially being called up towards the end of this year? Because he's obviously one of our number one prospect as shortstop.
Yeah, I think we'll see him because there will be some trades this year. I don't see this team keeping everybody from start to finish. I think the rebuild continues. I mean, we've learned from Getz from his first offseason, within months of getting the job, he's trading away or releasing a lot of guys. Like, he and rightfully so, there's no reason for him to be attached to any of these guys. It's not like he brought him in. He's got to do what, you know, Ryan Poles did with the Bears. Like, it hurt to see Khalil Mack get traded. It hurt to see them dismantle a lot of what was left of that 2018 team, but the writing was on the wall, and the Sox have to do the same thing. So I think you're going to end up seeing a couple guys get traded, and, you know, odds are more injuries. You know, if it's already happened after 11 games, you're going to see more of that. So I think he gets called up at some point. I don't know when it's going to be, maybe midsummer, maybe if not sooner because of injuries, then perhaps, you know, it would be around the trade deadline once they make some moves. But in a season that's already lost, the one key takeaway is getting these young guys some playing opportunity. I personally, in any sport, if you have the opportunity to give these guys experience, let them play. Let them start to figure it out. I mean, playing minor league ball is a lot different from facing the aces and some of the elite relievers and closers out here in the big league. So if he can get some experience, a couple months of play time, why not? It gets the experience. If he plays well enough, it builds the confidence. Hopefully it does more good for him than bad, but I say, why not? What do you have to lose? And the odds are he's going to be, you know, the next best option for the next future face of this team, hopefully, perhaps. So I say give him a shot. What do you think? Do you think he gets some time this year up here?
I think if he gets called up, it'll probably be not be until like maybe the beginning of September. I don't really see them calling him up until, yeah, like probably like late summer. If they do, I'm kind of hoping that they don't, because I mean, I agree with you about the playing time stuff. I want them to kind of take their time with him, you know, it's not like we need, you know, we're not a team that's going to be fighting for the pennant. It's just not going to happen. So we're not going to need that like spark plug guy to come up. Like, you know, I know the Orioles called up a lot of guys last season, and they just called up their number one prospect, Jackson Holliday. I just hope we don't rush it with him. I hope we give him proper time to develop, but you know, whenever he's ready, he's ready. Hopefully by the time he is ready, the things will be looking up for the Sox, but I don't really have much hope as of right now.
Yeah. You know what? And actually that brings me into something that kind of relates to him still, but just this team as a whole. I think confidence is a big thing too. The experience and the confidence. I also, because now you got me thinking, I hope if this team is really down in the dumps and really in the gutter, especially later on in the season when, you know, they've played 100 games, I wonder if team morale and just how the team chemistry is going, if that plays a role. Because I look at, again, I know two different sports here, but when I look at the Blackhawks this year, they had a lot of low points. I mean, they are one of the worst teams in the league again. You know, Bedard is obviously a bright spot, but I think at times we've seen some of the younger players like Lucas Reichel have to get sent down to the minors because the guy's not scoring goals. He's not producing any sort of offense. He lost his confidence. They bring him back up after going down the minors for a bit. He's playing better. So I don't know. The product of your environment, I think, has to be pretty good too. And this is not, you know, it's not a dangerous spot for him to be, but it's not exactly a safe space either for your young guys to come up here and learn the game and feel confident, like, hey, you know what, I can stand up and I could face major league pitching. I can field, you know, pretty well. You know, I could do my thing at the big show. So that's a good point too, where I'm like, you know what, I think he should get some playing time. And look, if he is one of the faces of this team and he's going to own his position, he's going to be playing for some, you know, with some bad White Sox baseball teams for a while probably. So I don't think it hurts that much, but I really hope just as an organization as a whole, they get their shit together and they try to build a better locker room, a better environment, because I think that's a product of some of the issues here with like Aloy and Moncada and Benintendi and some of these guys that you expect to play well. Is just this has not been a fun environment since for probably at least two or three seasons now, since Tony La Russa got here. He killed whatever they had in the pandemic season and what Rick Renteria brought with them. Actually, it's gone. It's not fun to play here. And I think that's part of the reason why they're not playing well. And I'm curious your thoughts on that. Do you think that has anything to do a poorly run organization, a depressing organization, a frustrating organization? Do you think that plays a role into this team's poor performance, especially, and again, players that we know should be better than this?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think the 2022 season and 2023, especially last year, I think this team really suffered from all the clubhouse issues. We're hearing now a lot of issues were going on behind the scenes with Yasmani Grandal and some other guys. And, you know, you heard some of the reports that came out last season. It's just like all the stuff that was happening in the clubhouse was leading to poor play. I mean, what have I always said in podcasts, you know, in podcasts and sports conversations we've had? Baseball is like the ultimate team sport in which you are spending like 6, 7, 8 months straight with these guys, all the same guys. So if you're having issues with somebody, that's going to cause issues on the field because you're with them all the time. It's not like hockey or basketball where you play, you know, every other day or every 2 days, or NFL where you play once a week. It's like you got to be with these guys constantly and you're traveling with them. You know, you're like sleeping around them. You're, you know, hanging out, talking together, listening to music. It's just all these little things. I think that was a big, big issue last year, especially. And from what it sounds like, I know Chuck Garfine's gotten a lot of crap on Twitter, you know, for podcasts he's done and talking about the team chemistry. But I do think in a lot of ways the team chemistry is kind of, I wouldn't say it's been fixed, but I think it's heading in the right direction, which is, that's to me the most important thing. Obviously, we're going to be bad pretty much regardless right now, but if we can fix the clubhouse and create a better environment and create a culture where people want to come and play for this team, I think that's like super, super important. So But yeah, I mean, just the fact that there's been so many clubhouse issues, I think has really done a number on these what's left of the core. And that's the reason why we're having all these issues. I mean, injuries are, that's kind of a different story, but yeah, when it comes to the underwhelming play, I think that plays a huge role in it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, and it's, you know, there's been media people, you know, from around, you know, the league and the city that have said that players have, you know, quietly spoken and said, yeah, it's, I'm glad to not be there anymore. I'm glad to be in a different, you know, environment. And again, it's a damn shame because this team was looking great. Like the expectations were high. The hopes were high that this team would be contending for a World Series, being in the playoffs, battling, you know, every year. Yeah. And 3 years ago, completely. Yeah.
3 years ago, things were looking great. I mean, it was like fun to be a Sox fan again. And then that lasted what, about a year, year and a half. And then everything went downhill.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to get to the Cubs here in a second, but I think a perfect way to transition from, you know, the South Side team to the North Side thing is one thing they have in common, and it's that trade that brought Eloy and Cease to the South Side, you know, for Quintana, that big trade way back when. I tweeted this out and have talked to people at work, and I think probably told you already too, so not going to be a big surprise, but I've been telling people that since Cease was traded that, can we just admit nobody won that trade, actually? It should have been the Sox, obviously, with getting an ace and then Eloy, you would have thought would have been a superstar. And Quintana, you know, yeah, he stuck around for a little bit with the Cubs, but it ultimately never really led to anything, and he wasn't great by any means. So personally, in my opinion, that trade, unfortunately, is a dud for both sides. I was wondering how you feel about that.
Yeah, I agree because, I mean – listen, we all know that the Sox were set up to be the winners of this trade. I mean, if you would have asked me back in, you know, 2021 who won the trade, I would say Sox by a landslide. But yeah, now after seeing, hey, the Sox traded Dylan Cease, we don't know what we're going to get from those prospects. And then obviously the other guys that we got from the Cubs were kind of just throw-ins, but they never amounted to anything. So and then, yeah, obviously, if you look on the Cubs side, it's like, yeah, Quintana was, you know, obviously good for a little bit, but at the end of the day, it didn't really do much for them. So, yeah, I think you when you mentioned that to me the other week, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's like, yeah, nobody won that trade. I think it probably made things worse for both teams, honestly, in the long run. But theoretically, it should have the White Sox should have won it. It's just because of poor management and poor play, things just haven't worked out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's you know, if you're a neutral baseball fan like me, there's a little bit of solace with the North Siders playing pretty well, 6-4 to start the season. Again, at the time of us recording this, we're recording this the day after the dreadful 8-0 lead that the Cubs did blow against the Padres. I conveniently turned that game on in the sixth inning when they began to implode. So that sucked. But this has been reported by Jesse Rogers from ESPN 1000. Obviously, Jesse is all over the MLB, you know, nationally. He's been checking the stats and watching everything, and this is the best offense the Cubs have had, he said, since 2016. And we all know what happened in 2016. That was a pretty good year. And actually, even with just watching the games, not totally checking the stats, I'd have to agree, because for a team that doesn't really have a lot of star power, I mean, there's a lot of good players, I think, on this lineup. However, you know, if you're talking about where's an Aaron Judge type of guy, I still don't think they have that. But, you know, it looks pretty good when Ian Happ is hitting over 300, when Suzuki is staying healthy and he's hitting, you know, around 300, and Morel is hitting around 300. And I love Morel. He's becoming one of my favorite players on this team because of the fact that he's like the Energizer Bunny. You know, people have been criticizing his or worried about his defensive play at third base. Not exactly the best position for him, but you know, what's the team going to do? What's Craig Counsell going to do when, you know, the ownership, even though they had plenty of opportunities to probably sign one or two more players to really go all out in a season where they should win the NL Central, they didn't. And I'll go more on that in a little bit, but Skyler, I know you're a Southside guy and you would love to see this team be 0-10, but for the sake of those that like the Cubbies that are listening to the podcast, you're outside looking in perspective. What do you think of the Northsiders right now?
Oh, come on. I'm not that much of a hater. Let's say 1-9. 1-9 is fine. First off, I didn't hear Jesse Rogers say that. I think it's a little early to be saying something like that. I have a lot of respect for Jesse Rogers. He's obviously much more tapped into the Cubs and the MLB as a whole than me, but that's a little wild. I think might want to pump the brakes on that, Jesse. But I mean, yeah, the Cubs, they're looking pretty good. I mean, obviously very small sample size. Everyone knows like April can be kind of fluky when it comes to baseball, but their offense does look really good right now. I'm obviously not super tapped in with the Cubs, but yeah, I mean, I would kind of agree with you. I think the bullpen, I don't know how solid things are there, but I think as Craig Counsell figures this team out over time, you know, throughout the season, I think they're going to have more success. So I think it's going to lead to a lot more, a lot more wins in like one run games as opposed to, you know, losing a one run game. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think the Cubs are definitely a team to be reckoned with in the NL Central. I still don't know what the hell's going to happen with this division. Somehow the Pirates are 9-3, which, hey, once again, it's April, but it's just, I don't know how they're
contender for the first month or two, and then that's it. Like,
yeah. So it's going to be interesting to follow this division. I think right now it's looking like, I mean, every team is at 500 or better. So as of right, you know, as of taping this, so it's going to be interesting to see. But yeah, overall, I think the Cubs have some good things going for them, and like I keep on giving a lot of praise to Craig Counsell. I mean, he's a hell of a manager, and like I said, I think as things go on this season, I think he's only going to get better with this lineup and with this rotation.
Yeah. You know, what the team looks like in April obviously could be nothing compared to what they're going to look like in June and July. Ultimately, I know I got hyped up a second ago about batting averages, and that obviously, you know, those things tend to flatten out unless you really are a consistent hitter, which is possible. I think for some of the guys, you know, in this lineup, they still don't have really any power bats. I mean, Bellinger could definitely hit you 20 home runs or so. Swanson, Suzuki, there's potential there with a lot of these guys, but like they don't have a Schwarber or Anthony Rizzo like they used to. So that might be something they miss in the bat. But again, if you have consistent contact hitters, you know, something that they actually struggled with when they had the power in their lineup back when they were contending with the you know, Chris Bryant and Rizzo and Baez, they were able to hit it out of the park. But you know, when you got two guys on base or runners in scoring position every other inning and you don't get these guys home, you know, with a simple, you know, line drive or something, that also could lead to issues too. So I'm hoping they continue to hit. I'm happy with the offense. Pitching wise, I mean, it's been pretty good. You know, Shota, the new pitcher, I love the fact that he's coming out the Chelsea Dagger. Apparently I saw, of course, I forget the name of the company, but there's a popular like sports merchandise, like t-shirt company in Chicago. I guess some fans in the outfield painted Shota Imanaga's, you know, name on their stomachs, you know, without, you know, shirtless dudes. Apparently he found that out, and he wants the t-shirt company to reach out, find those guys. I saw this on Twitter the other day. He wants to like help them get actual shirts printed, whatever design of his name or whatever, so they could do that again next time this group of friends, whoever they are, group of guys, goes to a game in the future. So this guy, like, I love the way he came into this press conference when he joined the team, and he's, you know, he knows the song, he's saying "Go Cubs, go," all this stuff. I mean, I talked to you about this before. I'm like, I love. He reminds me of Marcus Stroman a little bit when Stroman came to town. Like, just he's already bleeding Cubby blue like instantly. So that I like. And his first two career MLB starts, pretty good. He's already off to a good start, and I love to see that, because, you know, Justin Steele goes out with an injury literally five innings into the season. James Taillon is, you know, he's been hurt since spring training. He's going to miss some time. So you're already down two of your guys in your rotation. It is, in my opinion, still a shaky bullpen. I mean, this is where I still get a little bit pissed off with the Ricketts family, where it's like, you know, they had Montgomery, that Jordan Montgomery gets signed like the season starting, and he gets signed somewhere. It's like, okay, if you really want to go all in, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, this is a year to go all in to get a playoff spot, you know, by winning your division. You should not even be fighting for a wild card. Win this damn division. There's nobody that's, you know, I'm not saying the Cubs are eons ahead of, you know, Cincinnati or Pittsburgh or whatever, but, or, and, you know, St. Louis always tries to do enough to, with their team, their roster, to stick around. So they're always a thorn in the side, but I'm not trying to underestimate anybody, but I feel like this team, while a couple of other teams are retracting a bit, that the Cubs should be expanding and they should be at the point in their rebuild where they are acquiring pieces to get going, to really go after this thing. So for them not to maybe get one more elite arm or invest in another pitcher, I know you can't really have six or seven rotation guys like that. Like, you're not signing big time free agents to sit there and be relief pitchers. But, you know, if a guy is desperate to sign somewhere, you pay him some money and, you know, perhaps he joins you. So, I just think it's with the Cubs, it always comes down to they could do a little bit more and they never do. I mean, I know you're also a Reds fan, so you kind of have a pulse for what this division looks like. I mean, do you think the Cubs are crazy for maybe not, you know, signing a few more guys? If they could have got Chapman, if they wanted a third or first baseman, there was guys out there they could have got, you know. So do you think they're crazy for not doing more, or do you think it's the right move to kind of trust what they have and trust the young talent they have now?
I mean, me personally, I think they should have gone for it more than they did. I mean, yeah, like I said on one of the previous podcasts that I'd be a little disappointed as a Cubs fan, and I still stick by that. Obviously, like, it's good to have faith in your young guys and to have faith in the team that you have, but, like, a team like the Cubs should be trying to add pretty much all the time. I mean, the NL Central is pretty much wide open. I don't know if Vegas necessarily agrees with that sentiment, but I think overall, like, yeah, you know, NL Central is kind of just up for grabs. So I think the Cubs definitely should have probably gone into the season with a bit more, they should have been a little more aggressive going for it this offseason. The one thing I'll say about Jordan Montgomery is he's also a Scott Boras client. So I think that's probably a big reason why he waited to sign for so long. Just because I know Boras is always trying to get his guys to have, you know, get the best contract. And if that means waiting until the season starts or, you know, even into the season, then he's willing to do that. It just kind of depends on, you know, the player and how they feel about it. But yeah, I mean, I think if the Cubs would, I could have definitely seen Jordan Montgomery go to the Cubs. Like, that would have made a lot of sense. But like you were saying about Shota earlier, you got to love a guy that comes into your team and is just automatically locked. Like, he's bought into that. He's bought into the culture. He's bought into the city. He's bought in with the fans. And he's done exactly that. How can you not like a guy like that? I mean, obviously I'm not a Cubs fan, but that's the kind of guy that I want playing on my team. And that's the kind of guy that I hope in, you know, give it 3-4 years, I hope that the White Sox can bring in a guy like that where they're excited to be there. I mean, right now I can't think of a single guy on the team that's like excited to be there other than Nicky Lopez. Cause he's, I believe from Naperville. So he's a local guy, but it's like, you know, when Liam Hendricks first came, he was like all about it. Like he was super excited to come to the Sox. And yeah, I hope that the Sox can have someone come in like Shota Imanaga that's like that bought into everything and is just who wants to be there. So I think that's cool and good for the Cubs for signing him, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's such an underrated thing too, is when you could sign somebody, even if they're not the highest touted free agent out there, you know, when it comes time to sign people in the offseason. But like, when you get a guy that's that passionate, I mean, I would have been fine if they kept Marcus Stroman too, because I mean, one, I think he played well enough to stick around and get a new deal, but also, like, yeah, I want somebody that is fired up out there that could be, you know, like, again, like Christopher Morel, like the Energizer Bunny, you know, hits a home run, gets a single. I mean, he's getting everybody in the dugout, you know, warm, fired up and just get everybody going. So you get a guy like that. And I mean, hey, that's, I can only imagine the challenge of coming to a new country, learning to play, learning the culture. You know, I don't know how different, honestly, you know, playing in Japan is to the United States, but you know, when you're trying, when you have to have an interpreter because you can't speak English and all this stuff, like, I mean, especially pitching, like, you know, that they, you know, communicating with your catcher and whatnot, like that's probably challenging, and even for the catchers. So like, good on them if they've found a way to make that work. If that's challenging, it is, you know, difficult, but, you know, kudos to them for figuring that out. So I'm hoping they could keep this up, because we need a good team in this city. The Bulls and the Hawks are pissing us off.
This city deserves better.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%.
Because the next round of excitement is not going to be until the fall with the Bears, hopefully, which is what we're going to segue to now. Always love talking football. Well, for the second half of the podcast here, we'll talk about Caleb Williams and the NFL draft. Just, you know, basic talk of what the Bears should do with the 9th pick and yada, 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 because there's still a few holes to fill. But I'm a little mad at Bears fans, because I've read articles, I've listened to sports talk radio in the city, and I've listened to people call into these stations, and apparently Caleb Williams does not have Midwest values. He doesn't fit into what it means to be a Midwesterner. What the hell does that mean? I'm not sure. But apparently, because the guy paints his nails and because he was caught with a pink phone case, this guy just shouldn't be on the team. He's not going to play well, despite being the number one prospect for basically 2 years. Nope, we shouldn't have him. We should draft another quarterback or stick with mediocrity, I guess, and not do what every other team in our situation has done in the past, and that's draft the quarterback with the number one pick. You know what? It's one thing if you have an issue with the way he plays football, and, you know, I don't paint my nails. It's not my thing. I'm not into it. But, like, what if he paints his nails, and one day we see some nice bling on those fingers with whatever pink, red, purple, orange, blue and orange, hopefully, maybe at one point, whatever he puts on his damn nails. I want to see the guy with his manicure and a couple Super Bowl rings. Like, is this the first guy ever that ever did something maybe a little bit out of the ordinary? It's not even out of the ordinary. A bunch of people paint their nails today. Men do get manicures and pedicures. Who cares? Hey, Joe Namath wore pantyhose, and it's in an era where people probably freaked out and thought the guy was a crossdresser or something. Like, It's so funny, and it's this mentality of older generations. I'm going to piss off a lot of people here, but I don't care. You know, because you can't. The only way you're tough in this generation, Skyler, is if you go fight in a war. It's if you have your nails painted, saying F you to the team you're playing to spike up the rivalry, which is something Caleb did. Now, it's not good when you do that and you lose the game. I understand that, but I'm even looking at pictures of his hands, of some of the things. Some of the other things, I mean, he actually has some cool designs. Like, it's not even just like basic nails. Like, he has actual designs, logos of different things. I mean, it actually looks pretty cool. It looks like even in one of them, he's got maybe some, you know, team colors, team designs. So, I mean, this isn't, I don't know. It just doesn't really bother me. And last thing I'll say, and then I'll let you give your thoughts, is he's even come out and said that his mom does nails. What do they call it? I think manicurist or something. So, the guy, okay, so he's taking care of his nails. He's got a good excuse, especially when, you know, growing up at home, his mom could do that. So I just, you know, Joe Namath is wearing mink coats and wearing pantyhose. And then, you know, even our darling, you know, Jim McMahon, who won a Super Bowl and not really that great of a quarterback, but because he won, he's a legend in the city, was too busy wearing and putting the name of the NFL commissioner at the time, writing his name on his headband because he was mad because he was getting fined because they weren't allowed to wear headbands in the 80s. Like, this guy's more concerned of pissing off the NFL commissioner than what's going on the field during the game. You know, look, we're gonna look past this stuff if this dude wins at least one Super Bowl in Chicago, if he becomes a 4,000 yard passer, if he becomes the best quarterback in Chicago Bears history. We're gonna think nothing about a pink freaking phone case and nails. That's the end of my rant, at least for 5 seconds. So what do you think, Skyler? I think this is ridiculous.
I want to hear more, man. I want to hear more.
This is ridiculous. No,
you know what? Bottom line is, it is ridiculous. I mean, the guy paints his nails. Who cares? Does it really matter? At the end of the day, like you said, if he wins a Super Bowl, if he wins two Super Bowls, if he has 4,000 yards, if all these things, if he does this, is anybody going to remember, oh, this was a big thing, and what he painted his nails? It's 2024. Does you painting your nails affect your values as a human being? The answer is no. So you can shut the hell up, because who cares? If you don't like it, I get it. You don't have to be the guy's number one fan. But if you're going to sit here and trash talk the guy about painting his nails before he's even on the team, that's absolutely ridiculous. And if you're going to use that as a reason to root against him, I think you need to grow up a little bit, because that's absolutely ridiculous. At the end of the day, it should not matter. It's absolutely ridiculous that people are making a whole narrative out of it. Who cares? Let the guy do what he's going to do. Let's see how he plays on the field. If he plays like shit on the field, then you can knock him for that. But I'm not going to sit here and just have people, oh, he's Patrick's nail, he's weird, he's not going to be good. Like, that's not a reason. That has nothing to do with playing well on the football field.
Exactly. And, you know, and again, I'm going to bring up Joe Namath, because, you know, obviously not the greatest quarterback ever, but he's well known for having success in both the NFL and even in the AFL when that weird stuff was going on, because he played 5 seasons in the AFL. He was a 2-time MVP and led the league twice in passing yards, and while winning 1 AFL championship game and 1 Super Bowl. And both victories, by the way, still to this day remain the Jets' only championship games. Or championships won. So, again, maybe not even the greatest quarterback ever, but the fact that the guy had success and, you know, actually brought championships to a team, people do talk about him wearing women's clothing and the coats and stuff, but it's not in a bad way. It's just like, that's what made him stand out, kind of a unique, you know, character, unique celebrity. And again, like I said, it's like, this is where we're stooping to, Bears fans. Like, he doesn't have the Midwest values. What does that even mean? What does that even mean? All these guys come from everybody on this team. Not everybody's from Illinois or Wisconsin or Ohio. These guys are coming from all over the country, the South, the West Coast, the East Coast, maybe Europe or Canada. We're seeing more international people, international stars coming from playing in other leagues and stuff and other places around the world, different sports around the world. Like, I just want somebody that's good. I just want a guy that's going to be successful, and I want him to be a good person. You know, I don't want him to be, you know, Deshaun Watson or something. I don't mean to put both of those two guys in the same conversation, but like, that's what you don't want. You don't want to be what the Texans inherited, you know, when they thought he's a great player, great quarterback, and he's a piece of crap, you know, as a person. So that's where I would hold standards, like, you know, we would anybody else in the world, to just be a good person, be a good teammate, and just try. Like, we're upset about nails, but how about all the times that Jay Cutler would sit on the sidelines with this stupid shrug? And, you know, I mean, at the point to where Brian Urlacher and some of the veterans on that team were not fans of Jay Cutler, especially at the beginning, because this guy was brought in to be the franchise quarterback, and for as good as he was statistically at times and being the best Bears quarterback ever statistically, I don't fondly look back at Jay Cutler's career in Chicago. Not really. You know, you want to talk about a guy that's not a team player. I did not like Mike Martz as the offensive coordinator, but getting caught on a live mic during the game saying, "Tell Mike F you." And like, and not that I really persecute him for that. I could care less. You know, there were some issues going on. Okay. He was upset with play calling, and Mike Martz's experiment in Chicago was a mess. But like, if we're really going to reach and critique these guys, why not him? You know, why not some of these other guys that have come in and had bad attitudes, maybe not even at the quarterback position? Like, this stuff does not concern me. And I've went back recently and I've done my film homework of watching tape from Caleb, and I'm even more excited for the chance to draft him, which I'm assuming is more than likely going to happen at this point. I feel even better saying that I think Caleb will be better than Justin, is because I see this guy. He's cool, calm, and collected in the pocket, even when he has to move out because the pocket's collapsing or somebody's pass rushing him and he's chasing him. He could get out of the pocket. He could still be accurate. He doesn't freak out and make a bad decision. Even in the intense moments, he's making the right decisions. So the mental game is so important for a quarterback, to be able to read a defense, to be able to make adjustments prior to calling the snap, to be able to think on the fly and make decisions. I like how accurate, and I like where and how he places the deep ball, which is something the Bears haven't had in a while either, as a deep threat passer, probably since Cutler, you know, years ago now. So personally, after watching film and learning more about Caleb going forward, I'm excited to more than likely see him be in a Chicago Bears uniform here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I just think it's funny. Like I said before, The guy's not even, we have not even drafted the guy, and all these Bears fans are freaking out about the nail stuff and, you know, or the phone case. It's like, I just don't understand why these people are so caught up on it. I was not, you know, I was not a huge fan of drafting, you know, getting rid of Justin, drafting Caleb to begin with. Had nothing to do with the guy as a person or the fact that he paints his nails. I like I said, I could care less. It's just, I think you should base your opinion of the guy on how he plays on the field. And anything beyond that is just, it's just stupid at bottom line.
Yeah, it is. And I'm just, like I said, I'm disappointed too, because it's like, let's, as an organization, let's embrace greatness. Let's actually, and again, we could come here a year or two from now and be like, man, this guy wasn't it. This sucks. Or, you know what, the Bears didn't properly build around him. They needed to get a couple more wide receivers, or the guy got hurt because they didn't have a good offensive line. Like, it's not a guarantee we're going to sit here a year or two from now doing Windy City Sports Talk saying, oh my God, this guy won a Super Bowl. Oh my God, this guy's league MVP. Oh my, you know, the expectations are there for the guy to be in the contention for Rookie of the Year, to be one of the best passers, hopefully coming up. We hope he could be in the status of being a top five, top 10 quarterback in the league. We have yet to see that. It's going to take time. And he may not even be good his first season. It may take a year or two. It may, you know, Patrick Mahomes didn't even start his first year. We know there's, you know, Aaron Rodgers didn't start for his first couple of years. Like, there's Jordan Love. Like, you could bring up a lot of examples of guys that are even late bloomers to a point where it doesn't just happen day one, week one of his rookie season. So that's okay. But let's embrace some freaking greatness for a change, potentially, hopefully. Like, that's kind of just where I stand on it.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So before we wrap up here, Skyler, again, there's one final thing here before training camp, and that is the NFL draft. And it's fair to say the Bears, I think that the two big positions that people are talking about, or three, I'll throw in three here. Some people think they should go offensive line at number nine. Again, odds, they're definitely taking a quarterback at one. I'm probably 99% sure at this point it's going to be Caleb. So now the question is, do you get another offensive lineman, you know, to protect him? Do you get an edge rusher, you know, a pass rusher? Because that's the one thing that they kind of neglected in the offseason. They were beat out by many teams for a lot of these pass rushers. That is a little bit disappointing. They do need one more guy in that offensive line, but there are plenty of options in the draft. Or a lot of people are hoping that they could get a wide receiver. You know, odds are what it's looking like in mock drafts is that Rome Odunze would be the last of the top three wide receivers available at nine, especially with a lot of quarterbacks probably going within the first five or six picks. So in my opinion, if Odunze is there, or if one of those other, I don't think, you know, Harrison is going to be falling, but if Neighbors or Odunze is there at nine, I do think you go wide receiver. If not, I think you go pass rusher. A lot of people are talking about Dallas Turner maybe, or Jared Verse. I've looked into these guys a little bit. They are guys that could get to the quarterback. They're fast. They have good pressure rates. Definitely guys that could help Montez Sweat. So personally, I would see either wide receiver or defensive end for me, an outside edge rusher. I think they're fine on the offensive line. Personally, they invested in a couple of guys, not big sexy names. They didn't spend a ton of money, but they brought a bunch of guys in. You know, they already have Tevin Jenkins, and you know, they have a couple of guys already there. You know, they drafted some guys last year. So not too Darnell Wright is the guy I'm trying to think of his name. Darnell Wright, Tevin Jenkins, a couple of anchors there already, plus some of the new additions. You get a lineman later in the draft, but you need to address the two big positions of need. That's wide receiver and pass rusher, in my opinion. What do you think they do at nine? And even, do you think even trading back is on the table too? Because I think they only have four or five picks. It's just a handful of picks with all the trades they've made the last year or two.
Yeah, I keep on forgetting that we really don't have that many picks. I see a couple of people have Dallas Turner getting drafted out of Alabama at that number nine spot. Honestly, I don't know. I don't really know what they'll do. I think there's a decent chance that we could end up trading back. But I think it just kind of depends on what plays out, you know, two through eight. I wouldn't really be that upset with us trading back, honestly. But to me, if Rome Odunze is available, I feel like you got to take him, because he's a really good talent. Like, I just I would really love, I know we talked about it recently, I just really love if the Bears kind of went all out for offense, like in an off season. You know, obviously we're probably going to draft Caleb number one overall. So to me, getting Caleb at one and then Odunze at nine, that would be like a offensive Bears fan dream. But to me, if Odunze is not available, I'm 50-50 on, you know, an edge rusher like Dallas Turner or just trading back. So I think 50-50 at that point. But I think at the end of the day, I don't know if Odunze is going to be there. I'm sure he probably will. I think they'll either do that or trade back.
Yeah, I mean, again, if one of those top receivers isn't there because they all go within the first nine picks, then I can understand going back maybe. To me, I would only trade back if those top three wide receivers are gone and if guys like Dallas Turner and Verse are gone. Like, there's five players that if they're available at the ninth spot, I would consider drafting. I'm not that concerned, like I said, about an offensive lineman. I will say, I also wouldn't be mad. I'd be disappointed if, like, Odunze, if they let him go. But I do think getting one of those pass rushers would be huge because, you know, they have DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. Though having two top guys like that, I think you could technically get by with them and then hope that maybe Tyler Scott can do some more developing and maybe they give him more of a shot. And, you know, Dante Pettis got signed again. He was decent 2 years ago. I mean, again, as a top three receiver, not great, but if he's your four or five and does some special teams, cool. Velus Jones is going to be a special teamer. That's it. I mean, they really could use another wide receiver in general, but they could always go in the third or fourth round and do that too. And just so everybody knows, at the moment, they do have four picks. It's, you know, number one overall, the number nine, then a third rounder, the 75th pick, and then in the fourth round, the 122nd pick from their trade with Philly a while back. So, yeah, that's, you know, they brought in a lot of guys in free agency, so it's not like they didn't add enough, but, like, of course, you want to get young talent. You hope to get a couple of young guys that you could build around for the future of this franchise, but again, realistically, the best chance of getting super talented guys are going to come in those first couple of rounds. It's not necessarily about, you know, you could find a diamond in the rough within the sixth and seventh round, but the odds of that, it's more difficult later on. So yeah, I'm sticking with wide receiver or pass rusher, but I'm excited for the draft, man. I think this, again, this should be franchise altering. It really should, yeah. Obviously with the quarterback, and this just feels different. Like, even back when it was like the Trubisky year, like, nobody really was hyped about Trubisky. Obviously people were pissed. Nobody really knew Mahomes was going to be, I mean, it was Sean Watson in that draft that people really were big on, and rightfully so. I mean, he was a hell of a player and an accomplished player in college. And then even when they got Justin Fields, like, people were hyped. People were very excited, but I don't think even with him, people are like, oh, this is franchise altering. Like, having the number one pick, as highly touted as Caleb has been for the last 2 years, this would seem to be a fairy tale. Now, will it be a fairy tale ending? I don't know, but I'm pretty excited. I'm curious, where's your temperature level at? And I know we talked about, you know, them trading Fields and whatnot, but as time has passed and you're learning more and whatnot, are you feeling a little bit better with, you know, obviously us having to move on from Justin now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for it. First of all, I'm excited for the draft. I think it's going to be fun to watch because obviously we've got the number one pick and then number nine. So, you know, as a Bears fan, it's going to be fun to watch. I think I'm more excited than I was about Caleb Williams. I think it's just going to take some time. I'm just going to try to be patient with it and see what happens. I think, and I want to go back real quick. The one reason I think I'm, or a couple reasons why I'm so locked in on a wide receiver is because, well, and especially, I know I've mentioned Odunze's name a lot. I think having him learn under Keenan Allen, I know Keenan Allen's only going to be here for a year, theoretically, but him learning under Keenan Allen and DJ Moore, I think would be huge. And another thing is, you see, like, I would say within the last, like, 3 to 5 years, wide receivers taken towards the top usually end up being pretty damn good. We've got a lot of examples of, like, guys that have been pretty much good, like, right off the bat, like, you know, Jamar Chase, guys like Justin Jefferson. I mean, there's plenty of others I could list, but So I think taking a guy like Odunze, because he's probably going to be the only one of that top three available, I think it's kind of important because it shows, hey, we're not messing around. We're going all out for offense now. Like I said, he has the chance to learn from two very solid, like pretty much veteran wide receivers and Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. So, you know, we'll see what we do, but that would definitely be like, if I was in charge and Odunze is available at nine, that's who I'm going with. But overall, yeah, I'm really excited to watch the draft. I'm supposed to be watching with a friend of ours, Brooks. So I'm really looking forward to that. Watching with another Bears fan, I think it's probably going to get me a little more excited than I probably normally would.
Yeah, and I know Brooks is going to be pumped up too. Another hardcore Bears fan that deserves to see a better freaking performance, better product on the field, especially as the stadium talk continues too about where they're going to go and whatnot. So ultimately, at the end of the day, wherever the hell they play, it'd be nice to have a franchise quarterback. It'd be nice to have a playoff contending team, you know, in a couple of years when, you know, whenever the stadium comes. So hopefully they're on the right track, and hopefully, you know, the Cubs and the Bears, hopefully there's a couple of teams in this city that could help us stay sane, because the White Sox, they continue to sink further and further into the depths of the pit of misery, as I call it. So, I don't know what's going to happen. But, Skyler, thanks again, as always, for hopping on today. Always good talking sports with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Always a good time. Thank you for having me on again.
And thank you to everybody for listening and checking out this podcast and also all the other episodes. And it's great to see that the listenership is getting back up there to what it was when the podcast was a thing a couple of years ago. So glad to have this going again. Glad to be interacting with some people. Glad to see the listenership going on the rise. So share this with anybody that you know that is a big Chicago sports fan. And of course, if you can, you know, subscribe, leave some good reviews. And let us know how you feel, and be sure to commentate, you know, leave comments and stuff as well. You know, we could continue this discussion, and look us up on TikTok too. So I'm trying to cut up clips from our hot take moments, and we could discuss different subjects on there as well. So just look up Windy City Sports Talk and you'll find the good old logo there as well. So thanks again, everybody listening. Thank you, Skyler. Go Bears, Cubs, and I guess White Sox.
That's going to do it for Windy City Sports Talk, the podcast with Will Hatzel. Please share the podcast with neighbors and friends, and make sure you subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. While you're at it, please give us a 5-star rating and share your feelings about the podcast by leaving a review on whatever platform you listen to the show. Thanks again for listening to Windy City Sports, the podcast. See you next time.